This is Growing Up Aspen with Andy Collin, Chris Pomeroy. We're starting season two. Where are they now? Where we catch up with some of our old schoolmates. Today we're here with Missy Brinkman Grice. And I think I met you in Aspenauts is the first time I met you, probably.
Fourth grade, something like that.
So I feel like this season, what I want to try to do is catch up with folks and sort of see where they've gone. We all started with the seed of Aspen, and I feel like it's interesting to sort of see where we all went to and what we got out of it. You know, we all got different things. We're all together, but we all came from different stuff. You know, so.
Yeah.
We had the book that we did, but this is more really about you and about others and their experiences in Aspen. So it's kind of a different thing. And to Andy's point, we hit up a bunch of folks in a bunch of different age groups, including your mom. This season, I think we're going to focus more on folks that are closer to our age that we were involved with on a regular basis.
The high school, the kids that went to high school together.
You know? Yeah.
I feel like it's interesting because our grade specifically is from our grade down to like Ty Bear. We're very tight. There wasn't exclusion in age or whatever. It was like when you showed up at a party, it was like everybody kind of would show up and hang out, you know. It wasn't as exclusive. A little older kind of got a little bit more like you were the cowboy or you were the skier or you were the this, you know, you had your little, and I felt like in our generation it started to change a little bit. It was a little bit more, I mean, we had our cliques, but
yeah. It's funny because Andy, when I saw you at the class of 84 reunion,
yeah,
just seeing those people,
yeah,
it was a total flashback and like just like a time warp. And I was thinking about the exact same thing, like who were we as class of 85 and who was class of 86, and like it all blends together.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
And 87, right? 87, and I mean maybe even 88, right?
We were all trying to survive together is what I think it was.
No, for sure. I was with Jesse Bear last summer and we were with my mom.
Yeah.
And Jesse just, we were like reminiscing about Darlene and all of a sudden Jesse says, you know, there weren't really any parents in Aspen in the 70s. And I was like, or 80s.
Well, I felt like it was funny. We had tag team parents. Because we always had a parent around, it just might not have been ours.
Right. I had Carol Bloomquist and Mary Ellen Sechrist.
Yeah, Sechrists were involved a lot.
Yeah.
And the Sechrists had a pretty big, you know, from Peter all the way down, was it Katie?
Katie's like class of 89, even?
Yeah, something like that. That's
88 or 89, I think you're right.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good span.
She would be a great interview because she's stayed in the Valley.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we want to get folks like her too. I definitely want to reach out and get some. Ben Ball's done some interesting stuff. So I would like to, you know, hear from some of those folks, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I thought that's important, we always seem to talk about, I know Andy Mill mentioned it. And Mark Tache mentioned it, and Mike even mentioned it at the event, but outdoor ed seemed to, for us growing up, was, I mean, every kid I know, it was sort of a big wake up in their brain of the outdoors kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I think George talked about it too. Outdoor ed was, I mean, it's such a unique perspective. maybe you can remember some stuff, but I just remember like rappelling and doing an all-nighter by yourself in the middle of the woods and things like that, you know, most kids don't get that experience, you know?
No, and when you try to explain to people, like even just my daughter, when I was telling her, like, this is what we did in eighth grade, our first week of eighth grade was this. And she was just like, what? Like, is it dangerous? And I was like, oh, dangerous. I was like, they probably couldn't do it now, but, you know? But I did capital. What did you do, Andy?
I can't remember.
We did buckskin pass, but I don't remember. I don't remember if it went up capital or not. I don't think it did.
I might have gone up there with you. Was that seventh grade?
Eighth grade. Eighth, and I had, I think, Mike Flynn and Pauline Peterson, Taga's wife.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't know, Jen Seekers always remembers the details, so you yeah. But somebody dropped a Ziploc bag of weed and while we were peeing, and Pauline found it and just picked it up. And so when we got to the end of whatever that day was, right?
Yeah.
We're all just like tents are pitched and we're sitting around the fire and she says, someone dropped their herbs. Yeah. And I don't remember who it was. I was like, oh, those are mine.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably Zach or someone.
Yeah, and I know Secrets would remember because she just remembers all everything. But yeah, that. But also like the solo, right? The 24 yeah. hours that they like put you out in the middle of nowhere, and you didn't know that somebody was only, you know, 30, 40 yards away. They had just strategically placed us all so we couldn't see each other.
Right. Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to go beyond. You know, I just remember it was like, don't go beyond that tree, that rock, whatever.
Yep.
And I remember I like got my tarp and my rope and like strung it all up and was exhausted and went to sleep. And when I woke up, it was sunset, but I thought it was morning.
That day.
Yeah. So I got up and I start to like put this shit away. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's dark. And I'm like, where? And I was like, we didn't all have to be doing this.
Put me out here for 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah, all by myself with some toilet paper and a journal.
Yeah.
And a pocket knife, yeah.
And bottle of water.
In the journal. Forgot about the journaling.
Yeah. Journal, the toilet paper, matches, a rope, a tarp, a sleeping bag, a journal, and water.
Yeah.
Maybe one. Yeah.
It's interesting. It was fun to hear Mike go further than that, you know, that opened his door to K2 and all the other things and just pushing higher and farther. And I mean, those guys really took that to the next level, you know? I mean, here we are in our cities.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No, it's true. So true.
I feel like for me, it's I'm glad that I did it because when I'm in the jungle and driving down the street, I can sort of think back of that. And at least I know I have that in my experience. You know what I mean? It's like you can kind of go back to those spaces when you're in traffic and stressed out and you can kind of get back there and just go, oh yeah, remember that camping trip?
You know? And like, we know how to be mountain kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I could still the fire.
Yeah, I know. Well, you learn early how to do that, you know?
And I can still, like, it's like my one talent, the camping.
Yeah.
The fire. Living in Georgia in a warmer climate, one of the things that always strikes me is that one of the first lessons we all learned was how to recognize and deal with hypothermia, you know? And out here, it's like, they don't even know, what is that? I think I've read about that, you know, or whatever. It's just so different, you know?
Definitely nobody knows anyone with frostbite, right?
Right.
Well, the other thing I think that's interesting too is it's sort of like we kind of knew a group of people through high school from like elementary school or early grade school, you know? And so it's kind of interesting when you grow up with folks, and then even in college, you sort of knew folks around that you were with, or at least when I was at CU, I bumped into a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting to grow up with folks, because even though we haven't spent much time with each other, there's sort of a connection that you have with all the winter schools and the mall crawls and the Def Camp picnics and just all that stuff. It's like you're sort of connected in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
One thing that's cool is to think about, and I don't think we're unique in this way, but is to think about, you know, my first friend, I think, was probably, other than Molly Mensmer, who was a family friend, was probably Fenella Doremus. And I think we met in kindergarten or something, you know. And I still talk to her every once in a while, maybe once or twice a year or something. But just having that perspective of knowing someone your entire life, and even though we're miles of states apart, you know, just to have those memories, just
yeah.
Well, you're pretty tight with a bunch of folks, right? I mean, you still go up there, and
yeah. I mean, I definitely, like, Jen Sechrist and I have been connected since third grade, and we never really lost each other. I mean, maybe a couple years in high school, or excuse me, in college. When we didn't have smartphones and we didn't have, you know, it was like
Facebook or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Like before we could, but, no, I mean, we've never really lost each other. And then when I go home, I try to see Jeremy and Sally Oates, and I love seeing Jesse Bear.
Yeah.
And but you know, it's funny, 'cause Jesse and I have like, we were like, damn, I wish we had like really known that we liked each other when we were younger, because we both had these crazy single moms,
right,
and we both thought that the other person was like cooler or too cool to be friends or something. So like, she's like, I was a little scared of you because you were older. And I was like, oh, I just thought you had like all your shit together. And so I was just like, we don't have anything in common, because you have a crazy mom, but you have all your shit together. She's like, I never have my shit together. You know? And I was like, God, we should have been besties, you know? Because I was at her house a lot as a little kid. All the adults were partying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my parents too. Even, I mean, my parents were good parents and role models and stuff, but Colorado was so new. I mean, we were in LA, so to them it was like, whoa, Colorado, wow. So they were like, let's go drive over here, let's go to Parachute, let's go over here, you know. So they were just driving around checking out the state while my brother and I were in school or doing baseball or whatever, you know. So there'd be a lot for us. There was a lot of times where it'd be like, here's some cash if you guys want to go into town and grab something to eat. Go have something to eat. It wasn't, you know, and a lot of times we cooked for ourselves. I mean, we kind of did take care of ourselves, you know, and that's part of the reason why I think we connect with Jesse and Ty and those guys, because we all were in that same boat, you know.
No parents.
I mean, we had them, and they were fun, but you know, it's a little lax on the job there.
I call it free range.
Yeah, free range is right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I don't know, Chris, it seemed like your family had all their shit together. Were your parents like home and making dinner and stuff?
I mean, that's a tough question. you know, insofar as anyone had, you know, the nuclear family, we had that until I was about 7.
Okay.
But I don't think it was ever ideal. I mean, there was always a lot of partying and a lot of things, you know. My parents' house was one that was built for entertaining, you know, like there was a window to the kitchen where you could serve drinks and everything else. And I mean, you know, there was a loft and fireplaces and everything. And it was literally for entertaining, you know, and they did a lot of that when we were real little. But then when they split up, I mean, all bets were off. So, you know, mom was working sometimes 2-3 different jobs
Yeah.
Just to pay the mortgage and the electricity bill.
Yeah.
Just for if you've never been there and it's gone now, but we had 28-foot ceilings in the living room. And on two sides of the walls were all glass. So back in the 80s, just to put things in perspective, you know, the winter electricity bill on baseboard heating, it was like it was electric. So the electric bill was, you know, in the $1,000+ range in the 80s, which by today's standards would be, you know, like a mortgage payment.
So yeah.
Mom was really struggling to try to keep that place up. And so we didn't really, now she was, if she wasn't at work, you know, on weekends, she'd go and hang out at the Eagles Club or whatever. So yeah, we were total free range kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. But your parents were more community than my parents, Chris and Missy. I mean, my parents kind of would, if my mom wanted to get in with the writers conference, we would donate our space and someone would come in, writer would come and stay with us, and my mom would go to the events and go do stuff. And so they'd kind of get involved with that or the music tent and stuff in their way. But you guys were sort of, your parents were like involved in the community.
Yeah, I think they had been there since the 50s, so they knew all the old timers. Uh-huh. And then they met all the new folks as they came in too, and you know, we're pretty well seated. My dad was always, you know, in the Rotary and clubs like that. He was always doing stuff. My mom, her entire life, she volunteered her time, and if she wasn't physically volunteering, she was volunteering her services as a bookkeeper to help out with some of the local, you know, community things. And she just was self-actualized. You know, all her flaws and all her, you know, she was a badass. You know.
Well, and Missy, your mom was involved with the Aspen Film Fest, which at the time was huge. I remember when I moved out here and started doing films, it was like if you got in there, you could seriously get nominated for an Oscar. And and now I guess it's kind of gone down. It's different folks and different, I mean, hopefully it'll pick back up, but it sounds like it's kind of gone down. But your mom was so involved in a lot of those things.
She was. Yeah. I mean, she had Aspen Production Services.
Yeah.
And then she had Aspen Casting. And that was, let's go way back. So it was like 1972.
Right, and her clients were like Mount Dew and stuff like that.
71 and 72, she had me at Buttermilk. I was 3, I think, turning 4. And we were skiing, and this guy, this like crazy haired guy, his name was Joe Hainwright, and he came over and he was like, wait a minute. He was like, how old is this child? Because I'm here casting 9-year-olds for a Pepsi commercial. And she was like, well, this is my daughter and she's 3. And he was like, are there others that size and age that can see?
Yeah, like
and
all
she
of us.
Was like, yeah. And he's like, could you round up like 6 or 7? She's like, I can get you 20. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So I do not remember this. I only remember it through the footage that someone found. But they took everybody up Independence Pass because the mountain was closing. It was spring.
Right.
And they thought for some, you know, reason, you know, people outside of, you know, they're from LA or New York or whatever, they're like, let's ski. And it's like, well, it's April 20th, you know.
Right.
So we had to go up Independence Pass and they had us ski behind this lady actor person, and it was a Pepsi commercial. And then my mom got along with the crew so well, they were like, hey, we want to do a different commercial this summer. And it just kind of, so she just started becoming a location scout, a production coordinator, and a casting director from that.
Well, it totally fits her personality because she's so much the connector person, you know?
Yeah. So that's how that all started. And then I think from that, it was when Ellen Koner decided to start the film fest, which was what, like 82 or 83 or something like that. I think they were putting a board together. And I don't know when my mom joined the board, but
She was on that board for a while.
Yeah, Greg Poshman said, talked about where he was like the token guy.
Oh, he was, he?
It was all moms that put it together, and then he was sort of the token guy that was on the board that helped out or whatever.
I think we were all gone by then. I think my mom probably was doing Film Fest after I graduated from high school.
Oh, okay.
I think. But like, she did it for a very long time, and so when I would come home, you know, it was always really fun to, you know, just being a board member, she would have tickets and stuff. So I got to see a lot of Shorts Fest.
Yeah.
A lot of Film Fest. Yeah.
They did it in the fall, if I remember correctly. It was November or something.
The regular festival is like September, October, and then the Shorts Fest, I think, is like April. Yeah. It's still going. I think it sounds, though, like, and I don't know this. I've just been listening, right? But it sounds like now, like a lot of things, the board members are a very different culture, and there's a lot of money, and they're not necessarily local, and maybe they're not full-time residents, and you know, it sounds like it's, you know, good or bad. I don't know.
Well, it seems, from what I sense, is people bought our lives, but they're not as committed to living that life that we had. And so it's more about paying people instead of doing it and doing everything. It's now buy this and have this person do that and this person. So everything's all arranged for them. The lives are now all set up rather than actually being involved. You know, I mean, when you're in a community, there's a little bit of survival that happens where everybody kind of pulls together to make stuff happen. You know, whereas when you're in that world, it's like, okay, well, how much is it going to cost me? Who do I got to hire to do it?
Yeah.
Different.
It's like they've tried to buy the concept of cool from a shop and then left it in the bags with the receipts. You know, they're not exactly living it. It's more
of the, also, know. It's kind of like, you know, everything's already built. Like, we were there when they were still building.
Right.
I don't mean physically structures, right? Like, they were still building the community and still building the culture. And like, by 87, 88, it was starting to take that Hollywood turn, right? So we were so lucky that we were there when it was still community.
We had Leif Erikson. I mean, we had like real people from around the world. I mean, the Tachés came from Canada. So, I mean, we had people from all over. I remember going to the Aspen Club and there'd be a lot of old people that spoke other languages, you know? And that.
Well, I'm sure that's still true though, Andy, but I don't know that it would be the same tax bracket, really. Or, I mean, even if it was the same tax bracket, there was, you know, I tell people now, about growing up in Aspen, where we had, you know, Jimmy Buffett and John Denver played on the softball teams.
You know, right.
They were part of the community and they did things around that weren't PR stunts and they weren't places to be seen or do things. And the same was true of the folks that had a lot of money. They were part of the community. You know, they didn't necessarily flaunt. Some of them did. Most of them didn't care, and most of us didn't care either. So, you know, it's just sort of the way it was, you know?
Yeah.
It was interesting because it was about playing softball and then going to Little Annie's or Cooper Street, you know, and that whole little vibe of, okay, now we're watching, now we're over here and we're hanging out. That was sort of a community thing, whereas now there is no Cooper Street. I mean, they did put that place underneath Cooper Street, which I went and checked out, but... Yeah. Everything, I mean, what I saw, the only affordable eatery place is down by Clark's. Everything is so expensive that it's like, okay, all the workers are down here, all the food and everything for them is down here, and everything else is for all these guys, the big expensive art galleries and the Gucci and the Prada. And so it feels like there's this natural, they always joked about a wall being built or gated off from the rest of the world. But what they did was they did it with money. Is what it feels like to me, where...
See, I kind of think Missy hit it earlier with the, you know, the 80s and the Hollywood stuff. It was right about that time that I think that started, You know, you started getting people like Donald Trump that treated you like you were the service.
You like my face? I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, you had folks like that. And all of a sudden, after, you know, us as the working class, and we would, you know, bag their groceries or, you know, take them on a taxi ride or whatever, teach them how to ski, whatever. Before that time, you didn't feel like you had to go home and wash the filth off, you know? And it kind of got that way. I want to say in the mid 90s, especially, that's right about when I was like, I got to get out of here.
I noticed a big difference around the 90s too. That's kind of when I feel like it sort of, it still had its little Guidos and stuff around, but it started to go quickly around the 90s. But it's culture, and you know what? It's interesting is that it's everywhere. That change is happening all over the place. It's not just Aspen. I mean, Aspen's a great frog. You know, it's a good.
Or it's like a petri dish or something. You know.